I need you to knock some sense into me. I'm sure you can.
Yeah, I don't know.
I enjoy listening to you. I don't always agree with everything.
All right. Enough of this persiflage.
So, you want my question?
I'm certainly not going to get myself in trouble by telling you what to do.
That makes great sense. Gosh, that's good.
Did I overwhelm you with words and wisdom?
I've got 7 kids. I feel like I could call you every day.
Wait, you're telling me I'm wrong? Disconnect.
Yes, I am, Dr. Ray.
You just need to tune in to Dr. Ray, honey. He's got all the answers.
Am I right or am I right?
Probably.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Grandkids are a great thing. A lot of people talking about the grandkids, sending you a picture every 4 hours of their kid. Notice that on social media. At my age, I'm really not into social media all that much. If you want to follow me, my information is on the bulletin board at Kroger and my chart. Those are the two places you can really follow me. You also follow me here on The Doctor Is In. The number to get onto the program. Why? Well, that is your decision. If you have a question about something in your life, person in your life, circumstance in your life, emotion in your life, struggle in your life, something where you say, okay, let's see if this guy can add anything at all to my solving this, being at peace with it, not making too self-sabotaging a move with it, we put our heads together. If this is a question about a kid, 5-year-old, 8-year-old, okay, admittedly, the kid may be smarter than you, may be smarter than me, probably not going to be smarter than both of us put together, see what we can come up with. So, personal question, generic question, something about life in general, faith in general, psychology in general, emotions in general, development in general, diagnosis in general. I like the faith intersecting with psychology questions. I've even got a couple of books on that, so feel free to do that. That's probably the umbrella range of questions. So, the important part here is the number, 877-573-7825. Now, I'm saying that as slow as I can because that is just not an easy number to remember. I don't know who got that number back when. Couldn't you get something real straightforward? Let's make it easier. 877-57-EQUAL. There, that'll do it. EQUAL is spelled out, and you can just go to the numbers that correspond to those letters. And I was going to say on your phone, but phone really sounds kind of like throwback, doesn't it? I mean, I got a new updated phone. The one I just had a dial. Rotary dial on it. 877-57-EQUAL. But as I was saying, you know, I love this. Grandkids? My granddaughter. She wanted a Cinderella theme party. I thought, okay, well, that's cool. So I got a list, all her friends, and invited them over and had them clean my house. So, you know, grandparents and grandkids, they got a unique relationship. 877-573-7825. Got some calls coming in already. That's nice. Like to see that. One thing, too, I did want to say that many people say, if I don't call at the top of the show, forget it. And that's not true. That is not true at all. You can call any time during the show. We take calls on the basis of sometimes first come, first serve, but sometimes, depending upon the urgency of the call, sometimes the uniqueness of the call, sometimes the fact that that is a call that we just had something about not more than 6 minutes ago or one day ago, so they get pushed back a little bit. Now there's ways to get to the front of the line. If you have a kid emergency fit, you know what I mean? That's big. Or if you have disagreement with me. Or hostile to me. Boy, that hostile gets you right there fast. I need to be able to defend. 877-573-7825. Oh, look at all those neat calls. Okay, I'll make you this promise. I'll get to all of you. You've probably been like me in this respect. Wouldn't want to be like me in most respects, but you're driving down the street and there's a lot of open garage doors. And they're packed. The garage is just jammed with stuff. Now that probably reflects accumulation in the house. I believe that accumulation of stuff and, in the extreme, hoarding is really a function of, let's just say, American plenty. I mean, you could probably say Western plenty in some respects, but I think it's more unique to American. American plenty. We have so much disposable income. Now, I know people say, no, we don't. I'm living paycheck to paycheck. Yeah, but if we're living paycheck to paycheck, how is it that we can accumulate so much stuff? How come we have 34 glasses? How come when you go out on a Saturday night to some of these restaurants that the minimum price for a meal is $20 to $25? It's jammed. You have to wait in line to get in. So this accumulation, this gathering of stuff, which with time can become hoarding, is American plenty. When you didn't have the means to get that, you didn't collect it. It was sort of a safeguard to accumulation. I talk to all kinds of people. They do not like at all the stuff all around them. They don't like it. Do they do anything about it? Not much. For every 5 items that comes in, maybe one goes out. But you see, over the course of 10, 12, 15, 30, 40 years, and there's a certain sad irony to it all, which is when an elderly person passes away, their adult children go in and pretty much get rid of everything. All the trinkets. I've been in so many houses where they're just adorned with trinkets. All kinds of just things all over the place. There's almost not even a flat space where you could put a book. The book's a little too big to fit. Why is that? What is that about? You'd have to say there's something in us that just has a hard time getting rid of stuff. If you don't actively thin it out, even if it means a drawer at a time, a closet at a time, maybe a room at a time. If you don't do that, then over the course of a lifetime, if you're 45, 50, 60, 70 years old, you are just surrounded by all kinds of things, that much of which are either extras, excessive numbers, or adornment. There's a lot of adornment. Want an illustration of this? When you buy a gift for someone for Christmas, do you buy something that they don't have? Or do you struggle to find something to get them that they could use regularly? Not just something that they pull out every 8 months. Oh, yeah, this is kind of neat. See the way this twirls like this? Yeah, we found that if we have 27 people over here and we pull this out and this will... Christmas time. How many gifts are just stuff to put on a dresser, stuff to hang up, stuff to... keep in the kitchen for looks. Why? Because the average American person doesn't need anything.
I know, Dr. Ray, there's a lot of people who live in poverty.
It depends how you define poverty. I remember when I was much younger, I can't remember too far back, but I volunteered at a Toys for Tots giveaway. The kids were coming through.
Oh, I got one of those. I don't like that. I already had one of those.
These were kids who were supposedly eligible to get some things for Christmas, and many of them were saying, that's not cool. I had that. Had one kid, when he got a stuffed animal, he says, what does it do? Does it do anything? Clutter makes your life feel kind of out of control. It does. You're just surrounded by all kinds of things, and the question becomes, for what purpose? I watch very nice cars sit in the driveway because they can't get in the garage. The car, second most expensive thing they own, maybe next to their house, can't get into the garage. 877-573-7825. We will get to your calls, Dr. Ray.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Sunday was always family day at the Denha House. My dad expected his 7 daughters to be home for family dinner every Sunday. As we got older, nothing changed his expectations, not our friends or social life. We're made for relationship, for togetherness. That's why the COVID-19 lockdowns were so difficult. In the very first chapter of the Bible, God made it clear, it is not good that man should be alone. My dad would call each daughter and say, "Hey, I have 7 daughters. How come I'm home alone?" We loved our father and we honored him, so we were home every Sunday. According to research, 18% of adults age 65 and older in the U.S. live alone. 43% report feeling lonely on a regular basis. Between 10 and 43% of community-dwelling seniors are socially isolated. Family or not, if you know someone who's isolated from the world, reach out and communicate togetherness. This has been a Christ Center communication message. I'm Vanessa Denha Garmo, a communications evangelist and host of Epiphany.
We are the pro-life generation, passionate about building the culture of life in our healthcare and in our nation. But not all healthcare options are equally pro-life, and some provide morally objectionable procedures. CMF Curo is different. CMF Curo is a pro-life Catholic healthcare ministry providing a pathway for its members to build the culture of life in their healthcare choices, not destroy it. Learn more about CMF Curo at MyCatholicHealthcare.com. That's MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
Very nice to have you with me. I would beg the folks' patience. There are several people wanting to talk, and they're all very, very sensitive, thoughtful questions. And I would like to answer them all, and we have plenty of time to answer them all. So you can put your phone on, put it on speaker, and just go about your business, or do whatever you have to do. Unless you're in a car, then you may have to drive around a lot. What's happening among the young adults in many parents' lives is, if you try to tell me what to do, or if you try to put any kind of limits on me, or if you even try to maintain some control, legitimate control over my life, then you're trying to control me. So says Stephen's daughter. Hey, Stephen.
Hi, Dr. Ray. Good monologue, by the way. As usual, you hit it right on the nail on the head, man. Perfect.
Thank you, sir.
So what are you doing that's so controlling with this 22-year-old?
So, I mean, we did talk to her a lot. She's in college by herself, not by herself, but, you know, with friends. But, like, so the big thing is probably we text her or something, or she tells us maybe, I don't know, she's not feeling well, or she's something's weird, and we text her, how you doing, and she won't respond. So on a couple of occasions, I've gone as far as, like, call her. She hadn't answered her phone. I called her at work or something, or call her where she's at, and she's embarrassed. She said, "What are you checking up on me? You're trying to control my life and all this stuff." So that's, I know she's trying to, you know, become a woman, and I get that, and that's fine with one or two. She's out of state, so she has a lot of freedom. I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to find out is, are we really being over-controlling, or we're just trying to protect our daughter in our mind?
You pay for her college?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, oh, I see. Uh-huh.
Right.
Hey, Dad, I want to be independent. Oh, keep the money coming.
Yeah.
Yep. I think I personally would. Okay, the question you ask is this: are we being controlling? Now, given what you said, it doesn't sound like it at all. You're not saying, all right. Let's see. What could I pick out here as something that would be controlling?
We did have you familiar with the 360 app where you can see where they're at all the time?
Yeah.
Okay. So we had that for a while with her, especially when she was down there, and we told her we're not checking up on you. We just, you know, make sure if something happens, we know where you were or where you're at. But we took that off. We thought, yeah, maybe that is a little bit controlling. But
I don't think so. I don't think so.
No.
See, here's the question you're asking, Stephen. You're basically saying, is there an objective measure? In this case, with a 22-year-old daughter whom you're paying for out of state, is there an objective measure of control? How would you define control? A lot of it comes down to what the parent thinks is wise and loving. If you say, nope, I don't care what you think. I want the 360 app. I want to know where you're at and what's going on, and that's the way it is. Now, somebody could say, well, that's kind of ridiculous, isn't it? You say, yeah, I think you could think it's ridiculous. I don't. So that's first thing. The second thing is, how does she leap from the fact that you are calling to say, hey, everything gone okay, didn't hear from you, to that's controlling? How does she do that?
Yeah. I'm part of it is, I think, you know, she kind of used to struggle a little bit with relationships with friends and stuff. She got a lot of ridicule when she was younger. And she's very paranoid of doing the wrong thing, you know, and saying the wrong thing and being perceived as, you know, not somebody that, you know, somebody wants to hang out with. And so she's kind of brought this into it as far as kind of that's her reason why she's like that, because we, you know, coddled her too much and when she was younger. And
so you did something wrong in her eyes, like so many young adults look at their parents and say, I just don't like the way you raised me. Right?
Yeah, I didn't do that.
But keep paying for my college. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
I would say this. I would tell her, I'm not trying to control your life, but I will contact you whenever I feel it's appropriate. Now, will she go, oh, okay, Father, I accept that? No, she won't. She won't like it.
No.
So what? See, parents are getting bullied. Parents are just getting bullied.
Yeah, I'm really, that's true. I mean, she's threatening us with, I'm just going to separate us. You know, like, I'm not going to hang around you.
You don't want to do, sweetheart, you don't want to do that. because my money goes with me. It sounds like, Stephen, it sounds like a little more, what's the word I'm looking for? A little more hostility on her part than just the fact that.
Yeah.
And the other thing is this. Now, I'm no psychologist, but I kind of talk on the radio. And it sounds a little bit like, I don't return your text because I don't want to.
Right.
It's like, yep. you're bugging me, Dad. I would, if it were me,
right.
I'd probably say, you know, honey, I'm going to expect some respect here. I'm going to do certain things that, as a dad, and even at age 22, I'm going to keep contact where I think is appropriate. And if you don't like it, if you refuse to take my calls, you screen the calls, you don't respond to texts, I got to start rethinking our financial arrangement here. I know you're not going to do that.
Yeah.
Very few parents would.
Well, yeah, I know. It's the old, you know, my dad, you don't like, you live under my roof, live by my rules, if you don't like it, get out. And guess what? I left. So, you know, that's always, but I came back, you know. It's not like she's going to disown us forever, and that's kind of what the fear runs, you know, when they hear this rhetoric from them, but. I know darn well she's not going to be able to go out and support herself and live in, you know, the world. And
well,
I mean, that's, I don't want to hang it over her head, but...
Stephen, I don't know her, and I only know what brief things you've said, but from what little you said, she sounds kind of bratty.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. I mean, sometimes. Other times she's a great person.
Well, wait a minute. Brats are not brats all the time. It's like, you know, well, I only pulled that trigger for 6 seconds. The rest of the time I was okay.
Yeah. All
so
right, man.
I think you as dad got to decide. You know what? There's going to be certain context here. I'm not trying to control your life. But at the same time, I am paying for your life. So that brings certain leeway to the things that I do.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Hey, just one last question. One quick question.
Sure.
She's 22, so I'm going to assume she's a junior or senior in college.
She's going to be a senior.
Okay. Has she said at any time in the past 3 years, Dad, thank you so much for what you guys do for me, for paying for all this?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she gets.
That's good to hear. That's real good to hear. Because I was expecting she didn't. So, great.
No, she's got a great heart. And I think this is all coming from, like I said, some of her social struggles. And I think she went to a therapist, and the therapist may have put this in her head, too, a couple of years ago, that, you know, your parents are, you know, maybe in your way or something.
Boy, therapists do that. Therapists do that all the time.
They listen
to the kid describe all of their resentments and their frustrations at the way they were raised, and many of them were raised quite well and quite materially comfortably, and then they go to a therapist, and I'm not happy, and this is what my parents did, and the therapist, of course, say, oh, absolutely, I think there's some problems here with your parents. You might want to pull back a little bit, set some boundaries. Your parents might be toxic. That's what it is. Your dad's a narcissist. All right, Stephen, thanks for the call, buddy. I appreciate it. All right, I went longer on that call because I know, but I still have the folks there waiting patiently, and thank you. Thank you for waiting. Did she leave? No, she didn't. Okay. I saw you playing with that little cursor there, and I'm thinking, somebody's going to leave. There's good questions up there. So please, thank you for your patience. Flies for me. Hope it does for you. All right, let me pick up the pace a little bit here. Jones from Illinois, listening on the Roku app. Is this my friend Joan who sometimes contacts me? Hi, Joan.
Hi, Doctor. First of all, you are so right about the collecting. I can't believe I'm one of those old ladies who collects bags and boxes now, because you never know.
Yeah, that's right. We could have another depression, and you could sell those bags for a nickel a piece.
Oh, I know. But I'm glad you spoke about that, because it's a good reminder to go through the drawers again, closets and drawers. But my question is, after 7 months of having a mysterious rash on my neck that comes and goes, and always like on a holiday or something, finally figured out that it's probably psychosomatic. But then, what is there a difference between psychosomatic and stress-related? Because I looked up, a stress-related rash on the neck is not that uncommon, apparently.
There are certain places in the body that are more likely to physically react to stress. Stress is essentially the body's reaction. The stressor, in your case, was the holidays. That was a stressor. For whatever the reason, in your mind, you were coming up with all kinds of worries and frets and what ifs. And
I don't have the right kind of boxes.
There you go. That's exactly right. That's a major problem. I've seen a lot of clients like that. So I don't mean to box you into a corner. So given that, if you can't find anything physically wrong, like an allergy or something in your clothes, a certain type of...
a dermatologist has taken me through all that.
Okay.
And did a biopsy and everything, and we kind of came up with nothing.
Okay, so given that, if you want to put the two words together, psychosomatic versus stress-related, they overlap. Psychosomatic is an old term that really began way back with Freud. And it says your body is reacting. Soma is body. Psycho, of course, is mind. Mike, body. Your body is reacting to something that is going on in your head. If you have enough stress hormones floating in your body could react at its most vulnerable point. For you, sounds like the most vulnerable point is the rash point. Some people have the most vulnerable point in their stomach, their abdomen. They get pain down there. Some people get headaches. Some people get tension headaches. So it just depends upon how you're built, where it's going to happen.
Okay.
Now the question becomes,
what to do about it?
Yeah, what are you doing to bring this on? And it's going to come down to, in your mind, what you're creating that is so worrisome about these things. Oh, man, I could get everything done. Oh, these people are coming that I don't really like. I'm going to have to spend 3 days with them. How am I going to get along with them? Whatever you're doing, and you and I would sort through all that, because that's what's spurring this kind of physical reaction.
So I do, like you've been saying, I do think of, like, what's the worst thing that could happen tomorrow? It's probably going to happen tomorrow. Or, you know, what if this doesn't happen? What if that does? Or, you know, it's all that. It's all that kind of thinking.
What ifs are the nuclear fuel.
Yes.
Of general anxiety. And general anxiety is a companion that can stay with you as a low level fret. A preoccupation with, well, this could happen. What if that does happen? I can't stop that from happening. Then what?
Right.
What if that? Yeah, you start going into that kind of spin, and you're simply going to tell your body, rev up, get ready, mobilize. We got problems here. Hurry up. I'm in danger. What's the danger? My relative's coming in. That's the danger. That's the stress. That bothers me. And your body reacts.
And I tried to tell myself that whether I worry or not, whatever's going to happen is still going to happen. But it doesn't help me to not worry.
Well, probably what is happening here is there's something in your thinking that your worry is a defense. If I worry about it, it might not happen.
I'll figure out some way to
that's
prevent.
Right. I'll be per- yeah. That's exactly right. There's a difference between planful worry and fretful worry. Planful worry basically says, okay, I'm planning a party. What kinds of things do I have to do? What kind of food do I have to get? Where are we going to have people park? I'm planning. I'm solving the problem. Fretful worry is, well, I don't know what to do if that would happen. What if that happens? That's fretful worry. There's no plan involved in fretful worry. Fretful worry is just, I don't know if I could deal with that if that happens.
Right.
Tell yourself.
That's exactly what happened the last time.
Tell yourself.
Exactly what happened.
The fret that you're creating in your head. Even were it to happen. And that's the other irony. Much of the time, it's not likely to happen. It's just a maybe or a small likelihood. But even if it were to happen, is it so catastrophic that you couldn't handle it?
Yeah.
So your relatives come to town and he's obnoxious. And you're going to have to listen to him. He's going to spout his political opinions or he's going to spout his religious opinions. Okay. Well, can you let it go in one ear and not the other? Do you have to be agitated?
Yeah.
Once you reduce the potential quote-unquote danger to these things, recognizing even if they would happen, I'm capable of navigating it.
Yeah.
The stress level drops.
Because I used to be way more resilient, and things were more of an adventure. Now everything's, instead of an adventure, it's, oh no.
Okay, well here's the question, my dear. Do you like being that way?
No.
Okay. Then you're going to have to take apart every one of those what-ifs. You're going to have to tell yourself, what am I creating in my head? What's the likelihood this is even going to happen? And even if it would, how devastating is it?
Right.
Once you become convinced of that, all of a sudden these threats that you create, these are not threats of a dog going to tear your leg off. These are not threats of somebody breaking into your house.
Right.
These are social happenings that you've elevated into something dangerous. Mm. And you get enough of them together, and you just kind of exist in this state of high arousal. And your body says, oh yeah? You're going to do this to me? All right. Here comes the rash. Joan, thank you for the call, dear. Delightful. 877-573-7825. I knew it. I knew somebody was going to hang up. It always happens. That's a given. All I can say is, you want to talk, but not quite so much. Thank you for your patience. 877-57 equal is the number. Be gone to Colton in 1 second here. However, got to make the announcement because, as I have been beating this drum for a week or two now, Living Right with Dr. Ray, the TV show on EWTN, now in its 15th season. Yeah, I don't like to look at those early shows. Look like I'm looking at my son. We are going to Buffalo. We've been in Buffalo before, probably 5-6 years ago, and they had massive audiences, huge audiences. So I'm hoping none of them are thinking, yeah, we already did it once. It was okay. I want to do it again. Actually, we had a good time. We had a very good time. So if you would like to be in the audience for Living Right with Dr. Ray, we are coming in August 19th, which is a Tuesday, August 20th, of course. That's a Wednesday. I'm quite the detective. We will be at the WNED Studios downtown Buffalo. Shows are 5 and 7:15. Father Larry Richards will be there all Tuesday night. He's there for both shows the whole time. He's coming in. So if you like Father Larry, because he's always part of one of our segments, this time he's going to be there in Poison. And if you'd like to sign up, you go to the Station of the Cross, one big long word, .com, and all you do is sign up. Now, it's important that if you sign up, you show up. Believe it or not, the no-show rate is usually hovers between about 20 and 30%. That's bad, especially when you're counting on this for the folks to be there. You can bring your kids, some of you big homeschooling families, two homeschooling families, and you can fill up the studio. Well, we don't care. We don't care the age either. We like the little ones there, like the little kids, the babies. That's fine. We have a psychologist right there on the premises in case there's an emergency fit. The audience makes the show. There's no question. When I went to EWTN with my idea for the show, I said, look, we got to do it with an audience. And they agreed. So you are the audience. So please, August 19th and 20th, downtown Buffalo, stationofthecross.com. Click on the sign up button. You can come for as many shows as you want. A lot of people come for the first one, and they stay for the second one. They didn't plan to, but they had such a fun time, they stayed for it. Dalton from Spokane, and I found out the reason why it was called Spokane. I have a cousin who lives in Spokane, and I said, wait a minute, why wouldn't it be Spokane the way it's spelled? And she explained it to me, that it was some kind of journalist or someone who decided, for whatever the reason, that Spokane was a better way to pronounce it, and it caught on. Hi, Colton.
Hi. Yeah, we're backwards over here. Yep.
I was going to say Spokane, you know, but I didn't know, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so my question is for down the road in a decade or so. I'm marrying my wonderful fiance next month. And her mom is expecting us to welcome her into our home and take care of her when she can no longer. So this will be an extra responsibility, especially for my fiance. And I have concerns if she will respect the guidelines of our home. My fiance is hesitant, but not as much as me. So with your experience, what are the Christian duties for taking care of an elderly parent?
Let's look at the practicalities here, Colton. How old is her mom?
Right now, she's 65 and in good health. So, as far as I see, this is, yeah, a decade or more down the line.
At least. Could be two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The question becomes, what does it mean for her to not be able to care for herself? In other words, if she's saying, when I become debilitated, when I become mentally so deteriorated that I can't function, that's when I expect you to take care of me. Or is she saying, nah, if I just decide I don't want to live alone anymore, I'm going to come to your place. Which is she saying?
No, it's when she's debilitated. Yeah, she likes to be active and...
Okay.
Wants to do as much on her own.
So she's going to want to stay at her house as long as possible.
Yes.
True. Okay. So that's good, because what that means is it will get to a point where she's no longer able to live independently. Now, mm-hmm. If it comes to that, the decision is, are you able to keep her at your place, or would she have to go into assisted living or even perhaps memory care if she's that far down? So what I'm saying is, it isn't automatic that she's going to become emotionally or mentally debilitated, and therefore you got to bring her into your house because you may not be able to supervise her if you both work. She may be too fragile to be in your home. She could fall. She may wander off. When we watched my mother-in-law for 3 years, she wandered off. So we got to the point where we couldn't maintain her anymore.
we had to place her in a nursing home. Of course, some of the family members did not like that at all. They were thinking we should have persevered, but we couldn't. It was dangerous. So there's several things here. One, I wouldn't worry about it because, first of all, it's probably 10 or 20 years away. Secondly, the majority of people don't go through mental deterioration. All right, still a smaller percentage of those who lose their mental faculties as they move into their 80s. It's not the majority. Okay, so that's two. Three, even if she gets to the point where she cannot live independently, and I'm going to believe she'll cling to that as long as she can, at that point you may have to make a decision, which is, can she stay here, or does she need more supervision? And here's the other thing to consider. If it gets to the point where she cannot live independently anymore, because she's fragile, she's mentally confused, even if she comes to be with you, it will probably be short term.
Okay. Thanks for easing some of my concerns.
Oh, yeah. That's not something I would even think about.
Okay.
That's something that if and when it shows up, that you then make the decisions. We did that with my mother-in-law. She couldn't live alone. She just couldn't. She got to the point where, forget it, she was wandering off. We had to debilitate her car. So we said, okay, Mom can come with us. And then it just got to the point where we couldn't even handle Mom.
Okay. Yeah, and my fiance's mom, she said her nightmare is going to a nursing home. So.
Right.
She'll not want that to happen.
Right, and she'll fight it every step of the way until she's to the point where, flat out, she'll probably have to be placed. But again, most of the time that doesn't happen. All right, my friend. Hey, congratulations. Settle down to ease the mind of your fiance.
Yes, will do. Thank you.
All right, sir. I'll talk to you. Bye. This is Dr. A. I shall return.
St. Joseph's Helper's mission is not only to repair homes for those in need, but to repair hearts by providing companionship and peace of mind, especially for veterans and the elderly. But they cannot meet the great needs of our community without volunteers like you. If you have the skills to complete small two-hour home repair projects, to help in our office, or to be a prayer minister, visit sjhelpers.org today to let us know your availability. That's sjhelpers.org. St. Joseph's Helpers, giving dignity, spreading hope.
The Heart of the Interior Life with Elizabeth Jingle.
In the eighth rule of St. Ignatius of Loyola's Discernment of Spirits, St. Ignatius invites us, during a time of spiritual desolation, to patient endurance, and to think that spiritual consolation will return soon. But he also invites us to spiritual action against the spiritual desolation. St. Ignatius writes, diligently using the means against such desolation, as is said in the sixth rule. St. Ignatius' directional arrow, pointing back to the sixth rule, highlights the ongoing need to utilize all the spiritual tools available to us to reject spiritual desolation. Father Timothy Gallagher writes, these are the four means with which we are familiar: prayer, meditation, much examination, and suitable penitential gestures of courage. What spiritual tools will you diligently use during an experience of spiritual desolation?
For more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net.
My dad, sharp as a tack, but getting him out for a dentist trip got harder every year. When he moved to the senior residence where he lives now, Dr. Mansour's portable dental service was a godsend. Dr. Mansour comes to wherever the homebound patient may be, whether in a nursing facility or the comfort of home. All the services you'd expect in a dentist office brought straight to the patient's door. Call 586-873-5567. That's 586-873-5567 or portabledentalservices.com.
Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor's Inn, Monday through Friday. Friday? My grandmother used to talk like that. When you gone? You gone Sunday? Sunday, Monday?
Monday through Friday, co-production of the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Let me see if I got something I got to announce, and it keeps slipping away from me. Hold on a second. Put that can't. I got my phone here, and it's an iPhone 3. It sure is. Okay, what do we got here? This is you shouldn't do this on radio at all. This is really bad. Okay, let me get it here. It's downloading, and I'm going to say what I have to say. Yes, there it is. I am. The doctor is in. Okay, we've got to go. Congratulations to another EWTN radio partner. 10 years. 10 years on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. WWGL. You guys know who you are. 97.7 FM serves Steubenville. That's right, Franciscan. You is down there. Been down to Steubenville many, many times. Home of Dino Crocetti, otherwise known as Dean Martin. I used to work in East Liverpool, consulted to the schools down there. So I got congratulations to all the folks at Our Lady's Radio, from those of us here at EWTN. How nice is that? All right. Catherine hung up. Don't know why she did. She has 5 adult children. 4 are no longer Catholic. She says, how to bring them back to the faith. Ha! Oh, boy! It depends. It depends upon their reasons for leaving. You can't preach them back. Can't nag them back. And you definitely got to love them, however they are living life. You do. You're not condoning it, but you got to love them. You got to keep that relationship up. If you have some willing to read, of course, you can get some very nice books that explain the faith, defend the faith. There's a lot of great, great stuff out there. All kinds of stuff. I read dozens of them on my way back to the church. If you have someone who is morally living a certain way, so therefore they've decided, I got to live this way, and the Catholic Church teaches against this, so who loses? Well, the church loses, because I'm not going to not live the way I want to live. Find out about that. Sometimes you got to be curious. You got to say, help me understand. You were raised a certain way. How did you decide that this wasn't for you anymore? What was it? And if they say, well, science has pretty much shown that religion is something we just filled in the holes, that's all. Okay, there are great, great books out there that science is really pointing toward a mind that is beyond comprehension behind all this, and also some tremendous miracles that are scientifically inexplicable. You do that. You could follow up on the emotional resistance. I'm bored at Mass. All those people are hypocrites. I remember this was my experience, and if that's religion, I want no part of it. It's all going to depend upon their reason for leaving the faith. Don't fall prey to the one is, you made me go to church, that's why I don't go to church. Don't ever believe that one. That one's false. That is a cover story for the real reasons that you might have to ferret out. Now, all this said, you got to read the cues. If you bring up anything that smells of religion, if they get a whiff that you're trying to engage them in some kind of religious discussion, and they are hostile, they retreat immediately. Back away. And don't bring it up again. You can't keep bringing it up when it's very clear that every time you do, you meet at the least a stone wall, sometimes a bazooka. You may be pressured to keep bringing it up in your own mind because you're thinking, I failed. As I've said so many times on this program,
We no longer live on a farm in 1880. This is a culture. This is a society. This is a technologically driven society that can shape souls and minds rather skillfully and seductively. So what the kids were raised with, they found out that, no, I'd rather look at it the way the society does. And there's plenty out there to convince them that you were wrong, Mom. So don't let guilt motivate you to do things that are ultimately going to backfire. Gotta run. How many seconds, Andrew? 30? Thought you said 30. Now it's probably down to 20 here in a second. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor's Inn. Hope to see you in Buffalo. Be tremendous. You folks in Buffalo are amazing. Thank you so much for everything. 10? All right. That gives me enough time. Walk with God. That is a walk you do not want to leave.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.